Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Improving Your PMR Experience, Insight into WebSphere Message Broker Support. Today's presenter is Thomas Bien. Thomas has been a member of the WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 support team since January 2008. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Thomas.
Thank you, Joseph, and hello, everyone. As Joseph said, I've been with Message Broker since 2008, and prior to that, I was with WebSphere MQ support. And between the two teams and the 5 years that I've been working PMRs from a Level 2 perspective, I've seen a lot of different PMRs come and go, and I've seen a little bit of different eccentricities with the different teams. But for the most part, PMRs are handled the same way. And one of the things that I wanted to bring to you today was sort of how we operate from a Level 2 standpoint and how we look at PMRs and how we handle them from a Level 2 side of things. And hopefully that's going to allow you, the user, to interact a little bit better with the Level 2 team, knowing what they're looking for, when they're looking for things, and how to best further your PMR so that it gets resolved as quickly as possible. Joseph, if you could take us to slide 2, please. I've split today's presentation into two parts. The first, looking at how we deal with PMRs, and the second, giving you some pointers so that you can further the PMR yourself. And those are really two different pieces to the same puzzle, which is overall improving PMR quality and driving that time to resolution down. So just to give it a quick overview, we're gonna look through what a PMR looks like to the Level 2 team, how we view that list of PMRs, how we sort PMRs, what happens when you update PMRs, and what happens when we try to take a PMR to closure. And then under the second part of today's presentation, we're going to look at things that you can do to take your PMR ahead. Obviously, you can't make us look at a trace any faster or find the root cause of a problem any faster or develop a fix any faster. But there are some things that you can do to really speed your PMR up and help us out here in the Level 2 team. So if we could move on to slide 4, we will start looking inside Level 2 at prioritizing PMRs. When I come into work, I find a list of outstanding problems that need to be handled, and it's all one big list. And this list is organized based on the order in which PMRs arrived, and it's sorted by priority. Most everyone is familiar with the priorities. They're common throughout IBM support. And I've listed here sort of how the Message Broker team uses them. It may be different depending upon which product you have a PMR open with. But for the most part, this is how they are used. Obviously, priority one is going to be our highest priority. That's going to be our production systems, the critical issues, things that need to be solved as soon as possible. And in the event that you do have an issue on your production system or your production system is down, we can actually set a flag on that Sev1 to make it show even more and really point it out to IBM so that when it arrives, we know that this is something that needs to be addressed immediately. After priority one, we have priority two, which is going to be most of our PMRs. These are going to be issues in UAT or development or test that have a definite timeline. These are going to be issues where progress needs to be made and updates need to be provided regularly so that this problem can get resolved before whatever the next step is, whether that's deploying to production or getting things into UAT on schedule to meet timelines. That's where our Sev2 PMRs are going to be. After that, we have priority 3, which on the Message Broker team is usually as low as you can go. These are for low severity problems or PMRs where you have a question with how something works Or maybe you've already developed your own workaround and you want to get it resolved, but it's not necessarily an important issue. These would be things that don't have a definite timeline that can wait for more critical problems to be resolved. And last, we have our priority 4 PMRs. And these are going to be at the bottom of that list when I come into work and look over what's out here. And sometimes we can have very low severity PMRs. Some teams use this to have their absolute lowest severity problem. But we normally use it for an internal follow-up type call. We generate a small list of users and customers we need to call back, people that we haven't heard a response from, and that's gonna allow us to just check up to make sure that everything's going okay in that PMR. From a level 2 standpoint, when we come in to work and see this list, it's going to be our job to navigate those priority 2 and priority 3 PMRs to make sure that they are each handled in turn. We don't want to go straight down the list, but we do want to pick out the person that's been waiting the longest. We want to make sure that all of these problems get handled efficiently, while at the same time keeping an eye on critical issues that come in, making sure that those SEV1s get progressed as quickly as possible. And so throughout the day, we're constantly jumping around on this list, working issues as quick as possible. And that brings us to our PMR life cycle. So if we could move to slide 5, we're going to look at some of the hazards of jumping around on the queue like this, because each PMR is going to be in a different stage of resolution. And while it's nice to think about a PMR as opening a PMR, reporting the problem, finding a solution, and closing a PMR, we actually have several stages that exist that really need to be taken in turn and analyzed individually in order to allow that PMR to be resolved and fully closed. First thing that we have is level 2 understanding. As soon as that PMR is opened and the problem's reported to us, the first thing that needs to be done is the level 2 technician needs to understand what the problem is. The quicker that they can understand what that problem is, the quicker they can move on to the next stage, which is determining how to investigate what the problem is. There's a slight difference between understanding a problem and actually understanding what the cause of the problem is. And before we can figure out how to look at the cause, we have to understand where the problem exists. Message Broker, as well as many IBM products, are rather large, and not all documentation is going to be useful. So the quicker that level 2 can understand where the problem's occurring, the quicker they can figure out what sort of data they need to look at to understand the problem further. And that brings us to points 3 and 4 here on the list, where we actively request data, get data from a user system, and then start to analyze that data. Once we have an understanding of where the problem is actually occurring and what's actually wrong, then we can look at devising a solution, maybe creating a workaround, and providing that to the user. And then once the solution has been confirmed, once we know that the problem is no longer occurring and the issue has been fully resolved, we can then close a PMR. And in order to try to keep track of this, as we bounce around on the queue and jump in and out of PMR and meet each one of these steps maybe out of order based off which PMR we're handling, we try to keep track and understanding of what's going on by assigning a resolver to a particular PMR. Now, that's not to say that if your resolver isn't available or isn't there, your PMR is not going to get handled. We're certainly going to keep an eye out for our coworkers. If one of my coworkers is caught up on a critical issue, I'm not going to let his PMR sit there. I'm going to handle them and make sure they get progressed as quickly as possible. But we are going to try to keep a certain level 2 tech constantly aware and involved with what's going on in a PMR so that we can better grasp our head around a problem. It certainly doesn't help to meet a new PMR at 60, 70, 80 pages in and have to read through the entire thing to understand it. So we are going to try and keep at least one person aware of what's going on. And now, in a perfect PMR, once we get that PMR open, we're going to step through these stages one by one and hopefully only meet each one once. But it may be the case that we have to go backwards to go forwards. Maybe new data needs to be collected. Maybe we really need to start investigating further. Or maybe even, in many cases, we locate a problem, a defect within the product, and we need to investigate that defect and actually design a fix for the product. And that brings us to slide 6, which are APARs. An APAR is an Authorized Program Analysis Report, and it is how we track defects in the product. If we start really suspecting that a defect is at play here, or if we know that a fix is going to need to be developed or designed to correct a problem, we're going to go ahead and start talking with our Level 3 team, and we're going to be working with them to get all the data they need so that they can understand exactly where in the code base that defect occurs, and they're going to actually go ahead and design and build that fix and pass it back to us so that we can send it on to you, the user. And something important to note here is once we get to this stage, we start to encounter many more issues with the PMR, such as timing. It's not always that the level two teams and level three teams are in the same places. With many products, that is true. The level two team sits right next to the level three team and they work together. For Message Broker, that is not the case. Our level three teams are located strategically around the world so that we can provide more coverage and we're able to build fixes and solutions on the fly for critical issues. So in communicating with the level three team, it's possible that going across the Atlantic Ocean is maybe going to add some delay time to a PMR. And so once we start investigating APARs and defects, you may see the amount of response time increase for a PMR because we're having to do so much internal work to try and get an issue understood and resolved. The next thing to discuss is what happens when a defect is found, or more importantly, what's happened when one symptom that opened one PMR is found to be caused by two defects, or maybe a defect with two products, or maybe just general issues with multiple products. And that's where we can see one PMR blossom into several. We have a saying, which is one APAR per PMR. And in fact, it's only possible for us to open one APAR against a PMR. The system doesn't let us open a second APAR for a PMR. So when one symptom starts developing into several internal problems, we're going to need multiple problem management records to track the different defects in the product. And if that happens, your level two technician is probably going to come back to you and request that you open a new PMR. And while we understand that to a user that may be one symptom and one issue that they want resolved, internally we can't handle it that way, and we need the separate PMRs to fully handle and manage each issue as its own separate problem. It's not going to be any fun for anybody if a PMR is just filled with multiple different issues. It's going to make it hard to read. It's going to increase time to investigate. It's going to increase time to read and understand the PMR if you're not familiar with it. We definitely want to separate issues as much as possible. And that has an added benefit for us. That's going to allow us to track problems, where they're occurring, track which product is having more problems, track which component is having more problems within a particular product. And that's going to allow IBM to internally make the changes it needs on a year-to-year, month-to-month, day-to-day basis, where perhaps more problems are seen with Message Broker than other products. Perhaps we're going to need to staff more on the Message Broker team to make sure that the Message Broker team keeps up with the incoming PMR rate. And so while it can be annoying for a level two technician to come back and say, all right, I need you to open a new PMR for this, we're really doing it for the better sake of everyone here. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why we're here today. One of the concerns I've had when working with multiple PMRs is that users and account reps may have problems with which PMR to update. Certainly, if it's seen as one issue to the customer, where do they send the documentation that's needed? And we do have some other mechanisms for keeping track of multiple PMRs, so we can ensure that updates go to the right place. We can ensure that everybody has their heads together and that we're not losing any data by having multiple PMRs. So certainly don't be afraid that multiple PMRs are going to cause us a problem down the way. Speaking of updating PMRs, we can move to slide 7, where we can look at what actually happens when you update a PMR. We here at Level 2 certainly aren't reading every PMR at all times, waiting for updates to come in and, you know, spotting what exactly has come in and immediately responding to it. No, we need to be notified that an update has arrived. And so when you update a PMR, it's going to take your PMR out of our database of problem records, and it's going to generate it to our outstanding list of work. And like I said before, it's going to go ahead and insert it in the order that it was received under the priority that it was received. And as you continue to update that PMR, more copies of your PMR are going to be generated for us. And that's going to show us that you are updating the PMR, that you do have something to say, and that we do need to look into it. And those copies are called secondaries, with the original PMR being called the primary. So you may see from time to time secondaries being generated, comments about secondaries being closed, maybe even secondaries being moved to alternate teams if we need some more information. For instance, if I had a question for the AIX team or the DB2 team, I might pass a secondary over there to get their advice on something. So if you happen to be looking through your PMR, you'll see these comment lines about secondaries being moved around. And that's just internal on our part to make sure that everyone is able to view your PMR when needed. Now, if you don't update your PMR is often that database I mentioned, that database list of all the PMRs that exist. And if you don't update the PMR isn't going to come to our outstanding list of work. But in order to keep track of that, what we've done is we have set a follow-up field on your PMR. The last time an IBM technician has contacted you, they have flagged your PMR for follow-up with a particular date. And when that date arrives, if you haven't updated the PMR, that's going to generate your PMR down at the bottom of our list under those priority fours. Your PMR is still the same priority that it was before, but it's going to temporarily be viewed to us as a priority four at the bottom, just to remind us to go out there and say, hey, I asked you for a trace last week. Were you able to recreate that problem and get that trace? Is there anything I can do to maybe further this in the meantime or help you get that trace faster? So if you don't respond, never fear. We are going to contact you and try to get an update to what's going on. So let's move on to slide 8, and we'll look at the last thing I mentioned under inside level 2, which is closing a PMR. This is a little bit of a hot topic for us because, like I said, we're trying to track our issues. We're trying to make sure that we have each team properly staffed. And so closing means a little bit different thing to a user as it does to an IBM technician. From the IBM side, we like to close problems when we have no further work to do on them. Once we have provided a solution and there's nothing more we can investigate or fix, we have no more work. And so at that point, the PMR is pretty much closed in our eyes. But from a user perspective, we understand that a problem shouldn't be closed until the problem has been fully resolved. And the issue there is that once you fix a problem, you might not necessarily know the problem's fixed until it occurs again, in which case you know that it hasn't been fixed. You don't always know that a problem has been fixed because the error might never occur again. And for that, for that exact reason, we have set our PMRs to remain in our active system once we close them. And this is going to allow the best for both worlds. It's going to allow us from an IBM side to close a PMR once we've provided a solution. Once that fix has been provided, we know the customer has it. And at the same time, if the fix doesn't work or if it fails in testing down the way, that PMR can be reopened. So normally that's going to be about a 28-day wait period. Once we close the PMR, it's going to be in our active system for 28 days, at which point it would be archived. However, for issues where a fix has been provided and a user says, look, I just missed my outage window and I'm not going to be able to get this in until next month, and then we're going to need some testing, or maybe this is a critical system and we want to make sure that we can reopen this PMR, we can actually flag a PMR to remain in our active system but closed for up to 180 days. So closing a PMR is really something that we want to do to let IBM know that this issue's been resolved, that a fix has been provided. But at the same time, if that doesn't work, to keep in line with tracking PMRs and making sure that we're keeping an adequate headcount, we want that PMR to be reopened. So we actually encourage you, if your problem reoccurs, to reopen the same PMR if possible. And that's going to, again, keep our numbers more accurate, make sure that we know what's going on where and which components are our problem components. So if you ever have any questions about closing a PMR and what that means, or whether or not you need 28 days or 180 days to fully test your solution, that's something to talk with your IBM technician about right at the time of closure, because they're probably going to want to push for closure before you have felt that the fix has been fully tested. Certainly, the longer you can test, the better, because that's going to provide you more accurate results. And that's going to end inside level two, what it is to work the PMR from our side. So we're going to go ahead and move on to slide 9, which is interacting with level two. What can you do as a user to make the PMR go faster? Like I said before, so much of the work is done here in the IBM labs that the user can't affect how long it takes to read a trace, how long it takes to build a fix. But there are some things that you can do. And now recently I had some feedback on a PMR by a customer who thought up a very nice solution to this problem, which was the first step in the process takes too much time, and getting to the right group in a PMR is a huge delay. If this can be improved, I think the whole process would improve. And we here at IBM agree with that. Certainly a large portion of a PMR's time is opening the PMR, making sure that PMR is with the right team, making sure the right information is in that PMR, and that the right technician is looking at it. And so that brings up a big question, which is, why does it take so long to get there? Certainly, getting a PMR to the correct team shouldn't take so long, and getting to the right technicians to handle it shouldn't take too long. So why is that such an issue? And if we move to slide 10, we can look at the first main problem area that we see. This is a little bit of an eccentricity with our electronic service request tool. The ESR tool, if you're not familiar with it, is on IBM.com and allows you to create a PMR and send that off to us without needing to call in and speak to somebody. For the message broker product, we actually have a little bit of an eccentricity, which we've seen cause some problems and actually cause some PMRs to be misrouted. So I wanted to clear that up here. If you look on the left side or the right side here, you have the results of searching the ESR tool for your product. I just went to the ESR tool and typed in Webster Message Broker, and it allowed me to select either my component or my product. And if I searched by component, I scrolled down and found Webster Message Broker for AIX, and I said, oh, that's my product and that's my operating system, I want that one. And then it asks me to select a product. And I noticed that my two choices are business integration for Financial Networks version 2 or Message Broker version 6. And Message Broker version 6 has been out of support since April. So that was not the one that I wanted. I actually wanted Message Broker version 7, and that was not a choice. If you look on the right side, you can see that if I scroll down through my list of products and select Message Broker version 7, I was then asked to choose a component. But under the component list, I wasn't allowed to choose AIX. So I'm brought with a bit of a conundrum. What do I do? Do I select my operating system, or do I select the proper version for my product? In this case, the version of the product is preferred. At version 6 of our product, we released each operating system, the product for each operating system, under a different component ID. And that actually allows the user to select the proper OS at version 6, whereas at version 6.1 and version 7, we simply grouped them all into one big multi-platform option. And we wanted to go ahead and clear up right here that the proper product and then the best option for a component below that is a much preferred choice. We've actually seen a few issues where a WebSphere application server, PMR, came in because the operating system was selected under WebSphere Message Broker rather than selecting WebSphere Application Server and selecting the proper version of WebSphere Application Server. And once you hit send on the ESR tool, that's going to generate the PMR to the proper team for that particular component. And so if that's off at all, the very first thing that's going to happen with your PMR is it's going to be with a group of people that doesn't know what to do with it. And they're going to have to figure out which exact product it is, contact that team, get the PMR transferred to that team. So a big gotcha is with this eccentricity of the ESR tool and the Message Broker product in particular. I don't think many other products have this component listing for a particular version of their product and not for other versions. So it's something you're definitely going to want to look out for when opening PMRs against the Message Broker product. If we can move to slide 11, we're going to look at what happens once you open the PMR. Now, whether you open it with the ESR tool or with your phone by calling into one of our support centers, the first thing you're going to want to do is provide as much information as possible just in case the PMR was sent to the wrong team or misrouted. And that can serve as a bit of a double check in case anything was selected wrong or perhaps someone on the phone didn't hear you quite right. And that's going to allow us to make any snap changes before we start investigating a PMR. In the example here, I've listed WebSphere Message Broker 7002 on AIX. Certainly, if you opened with the ESR tool that you were using Message Broker version 7, that PMR is going to come into us. But if you then update the PMR and say, I'm having problems with my SAP input node, then I would know that I need to contact our SAP adapters team. You as a user might not know that that's two different teams, but that's something that I know. And that's a change that I can make immediately upon seeing a PMR once it arrives without having to go back and confirm with the user and maybe waste some precious time trying to understand where the problem's occurring. So as much information about the generic component and the operating system and the version that you can put into a PMR initially is going to allow us to make any last-minute changes to that routing before we try and contact you, just to make sure that PMR is with the proper team or even the proper technician for the job. If we move to slide 12, once you get your PMR to the proper team, then you're going to want to get a better response. You're going to want to communicate most effectively with Level 2. Now, in today's fast-paced world and a youth that was raised on the Internet, we've seen a desire for asynchronous communication. Certainly things like email, ESR tools, things like that are going to allow us to contact you and you to contact us maybe when you're not available or when I'm not available and the information still gets across. But sometimes that's really not good enough to discuss a problem or to understand a problem. So go ahead and specify your preference in the PMR, whether you want to communicate through the ESR tool, whether email is fine, or whether you'd like to speak over the phone. We're certainly happy to pick up the phone and call you and discuss an issue. It can very quickly clear up miscommunications and misunderstandings that are sometimes common with email and the ESR tool. Next, you're going to want to tell us how this issue affects your business. For the past few years, we've been doing a business impact keyword where we have been trying to get an understanding of how a particular issue affects the customer's business. And this is going to help us out in a few ways. Consciously, it's going to help us understand the issue, understand where it's occurring, why it's occurring, and maybe even provide a bit of a workaround as a temporary solution while we continue to investigate. And from a subconscious standpoint, letting IBM know how this affects your business, whether it's I need to move this into production this weekend, or none of my developers can work on this until this is resolved, or maybe even my company missed a shipment because of this particular error. That's going to familiarize the level two technician with the problem, and it's going to sort of help breed ownership or responsibility into it. It's going to make that problem stand out more to the technician. It's going to make them remember it, and it's going to make them first thing in the morning say, oh, hey, PMR XYZ, I need to follow up with them to make sure their developers can deploy to their test system. So little things like that are not necessarily going to be not bad, but it can't hurt, and it will certainly improve relations with the Level 2 team as they try to understand this issue and how it affects you. Lastly, if the phone's not enough, and if email's not enough, if ESR is not enough, if the documentation that we've collected aren't enough, we've got to have some way to understand when this problem's occurring and how the problem's occurring. And IBM has created a few tools which can certainly help out in this. Very similar to WebEx or Lotus Live, we have an IBM Assist On-Site tool. It's a small one-time application that takes a connection code that is given to you by IBM support and generates a one-time link so that the IBM technician can review your problem and watch it as it occurs. And you can set whether or not this is a simple chat session or a shared view of your screen or maybe even shared control in some cases. And that can be very powerful in helping Level 2 understand a hard-to-describe issue or an issue where you're not exactly sure why it's occurring, but it is occurring. And that can be very helpful. So if we move on to slide 13, once we get this understanding and better response from IBM, we're going to want to get a quicker solution. And so ultimately the question is, what can you do as a user to make sure that you get a quicker solution? Like I've said a few times now, you can't make us look at traces faster, you can't make us build fixes faster, but you can reduce the amount of time it takes us to understand the issue. And that can be done in three ways. First, we want you to understand your issue as best as possible. If you open a PMR as soon as you get an error code, you might not necessarily know when that error is occurring or why that error is occurring. But if you know that, and you can come to IBM when you open a PMR and say, hey, this is exactly when this is occurring, and this is what's occurring, then we're going to understand it faster. Second, you're going to want to collect some information about that problem. You're going to want to collect maybe some error logs, some trace data, and get whatever is relevant to us as quick as possible. And ultimately, getting all this information to us as fast as possible. And that can be a bit of a hang-up that we'll discuss here in a minute. But what I want to focus on first is relevant information. So if we move to slide 14, what is relevant? Well, some things are always relevant, no matter the product, your version, the environment you're using, any error logs, obviously a detailed description of the problem. These are things that are always going to be helpful and are never going to hurt. Take, for example, error logs. We've had a few cases where a PMR was opened and the response is that no error is being generated, and so an error log is not sent in. But in many cases, the level 2 support technician isn't necessarily using that error log to look at a particular error, but it's to look at what's going on the system. Perhaps the error log shows some recent deployments for Message Broker. Perhaps the error log doesn't show anything. All of that is key information that we can use to help understand a problem, even if no error is occurring. So error logs, along with a detailed description of exactly when this happens, exactly what you're doing, the last change that you made before it occurred, that's really going to help us understand and will always be relevant for a PMR. And then the next thing is the information that's sometimes relevant. Maybe another product's involved. Maybe you have an error occurring at a particular time and you need to trace it to understand exactly where in the code it's occurring. Maybe some configuration files need to be reviewed for a message broker configurable service or perhaps database settings. And maybe even detailed environment data needs to be collected, such as process lists, maybe even some settings for the amount of RAM or available memory on a system. That information is sometimes relevant, and when it is relevant, it needs to be collected. Which brings us to the next question, which is, how can you as the user know what information is relevant for IBM? Obviously, if you know what's relevant, you can get it to us faster, which is something that we need to address. We need to enable you, the user, to collect the relevant information, maybe even when you don't know it's relevant information. And if we move to slide 15, we have a few ways of doing that. Recently, one of our tooling teams has created a product called the IBM Support Assistant. And for most of the IBM products, they have released a light version of this ISA Lite tool. It doesn't need to be installed. It's very lightweight. You simply go to IBM.com, download it for your product, open it up to run it, and select what type of problem you're having. Right here you can see under broker execution, if you maybe had a problem creating a broker, MQSI create broker command, you could click broker creation problem and click collect data, and it will automatically collect all the information we're going to need. We're not going to need to ask you for browse data of the broker database. We're not going to need to ask you to collect a trace. We're not going to need to ask you to look further at the MQSI create broker command. That tool is going to do it all, package it all up, put it in one little zip file, and all you have to do is send that in to us. One of the problems, this tool is only available for Message Broker on version 6.0 and 6.1. Most other products have it available for most of their versions. We had some changes that were introduced with version 7, and so we don't have a ISA Lite tool for version 7 just yet. But for version 6.1, it is still very handy. And if you are one of those users that is still using version 6.1 and you have a problem, I highly recommend using it to collect data and get that to us as soon as the PMR is opened. If you are using version 7 or maybe you're having some problems with ISA Lite, we have had some reports of that, you can always use the IBM.com must-gather pages to do a very similar thing. The must-gather pages are available for almost all of IBM's products, and you simply go through, select your version, your operating system, your component of the problem, exactly what type of problem you're having, and it'll generate a list of things we're most likely to ask for, as well as step-by-step instructions on how to get that. So certainly use the must-gather pages as a way to preemptively collect some things that we might need. Last, common sense. When you're reporting a problem to us, we only know as much as you tell us. So if you're getting a particular pop-up window at a particular time, or you're getting a particular error, definitely take a screen cap of that pop-up, save off that entire error message, upload those things to the PMR, because unless we're told about them, we're not going to know to ask for them. And so that's really where, as a fail-safe, you can get some extra information to us. As you never know, as that may hold the key to a PMR. Now, if we move on to slide 16, we're going to look at getting information to IBM. This is another fun little detail that's not always known, but as soon as you have a PMR, you can take that information that you've collected and you can get that to us. For SEV2s, SEV3 PMRs, lower priority PMRs that are going to be maybe sitting on the queue for a few hours, maybe up to a day. Maybe we have a lot of critical issues we're working on. Your PMR won't be responded to immediately. And you can take that time, even though you haven't had a response from us, to get that information to us. That way, when we open the PMR, it's already there, and we can immediately jump into our data analysis phase. And we've skipped several stages of the PMR simply because the information we needed was already there. Now, as soon as you have a PMR number, you can go to IBM.com and open up the service request tool, look up your PMR, and make updates to it. You can email us. Most of the WebSphere products use the email address listed there. Just make sure that you include your full PMR number, the branch and the country code, in the subject line of your email. And that ecurep.ibm.com account is going to automatically put your PMR in your email into the PMR and update the PMR to our list to let us know you've contacted us. Lastly, you can upload the files either through one of various FTP servers. I know there's an internet browser link out there, or even through the ESR tool. I believe you're allowed to attach files as well. And as long as you get that information to us as quick as possible, we're going to have that when we start looking at your PMR. And certainly when you update a PMR with any of these methods, that's going to generate a secondary, like I said before, of your PMR to our queue. And that's going to show us that you're active, that you want this issue resolved, that you're sending in information to help. And so we'll already be aware by the time we get to the PMR that you've been proactive and you've got that information there for us. And so we're much more likely to be extremely optimistic when we open the PMR, and that might help us a little bit along the way. Now, if we go to slide 17, I've included a couple of useful links here. I mentioned a few things, such as the Assist On-Site tool, the ESR tool, and ISA Lite. I've gone ahead and put those here. Message Broker Must Gather, that's specifically for Message Broker, as well as the ISA Lite tool. If you want to look those up for your product or another product, simply go to your IBM support portal page, go ahead and select your product, and search for either ISA Lite or MustGather, and those links should come back right away. If you're doing MustGather, I believe the item that you're going to want to look for is called Read First, and that will allow you to first specify what the product is and what the problem is and start leading you down those steps to finding the documentation you need. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn the presentation back to Joseph, who moved to slide 18.
Thank you, Thomas, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.